Thank you for selecting this course on conspiracies and conspiracy theories. I'm your professor, Dr. Michael Shermer. Lecture 1, the difference between conspiracies and conspiracy theories. On Friday, March 15th, 2019, a 28-year-old Australian man wielding five firearms stormed two mosques in Christchurch, New Zealand, and opened fire, killing 50 people and wounding dozens more. It was the worst mass public shooting in the history of that country, prompting Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern to reflect, "While the nation grapples with a form of grief and anger that we have not experienced before, we are seeking answers." One answer may be found in the shooter's rambling 74-page manifesto titled The Great Replacement, apparently inspired by a book of the same title by the French author Renaud Camus. The Great Replacement is a right-wing conspiracy theory that claims that white Christian Europeans are being systematically replaced by people of non-European descent, most notably from North Africa, Sub-Saharan Africa, and the Arab Middle East, through immigration and higher birth rates. The New Zealand killer's name is Breton Harrison Tarrant, and his manifesto is filled with white supremacist tropes focused on this conspiracy theory. Starting with his opening sentence, "It's the birth rates," repeated three times. Quote, "If there is one thing I want you to remember from these writings, it's that the birth rates must change," Tarrant insists. "Even if we were to deport all non-Europeans from our lands tomorrow, the European people will still be spiraling into decay and eventual death." Tarrant then cites the replacement fertility level of 2.06 births per woman, grumbling that not a single Western country, not a single white nation reaches this level. The result, he concludes, is white genocide. This is classic 19th century blood and soil romanticism, and the self-described ethno-nationalist Tarrant writes that he went on this murderous spree, quote, "to ensure the existence of our people and a future for white children whilst preserving and exalting nature and the natural order." His screed goes on and on like this, culminating in a photo collage of attractive white people and well-armed militiamen. It's reminiscent of the Unite the Right event in Charlottesville, Virginia, in August of 2017, when white supremacists shouted slogans like "blood and soil" and "Jews will not replace us." Given that there are only about 15 million Jews in the world, Judaism employs no missionary effort at conversion, and birth rates among Jewish families are among the lowest in the world, why would any group worry about being replaced by them? They're not. They're reflecting the conspiracy theory that Jews control the media, politics, banking and finance, and even the world economy. In his manifesto, Tarrant references the number 14, or the 14-word slogan, originally coined by the white supremacist David Lane while in federal prison for his role in the 1984 murder of the Jewish radio talk show host Alan Berg. Here are the 14 words. "We must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children." The number is sometimes rendered as 14/88, with the 8s representing the 8th letter of the alphabet, H, and 88 or HH standing for Heil Hitler. Lane, in fact, was inspired by Adolf Hitler's conspiracy theory-laden book, Mein Kampf, in which the Nazi leader growls, "What we must fight for is to safeguard the existence and reproduction of our race and our people, the sustenance of our children and the purity of our blood, the freedom and independence of the fatherland, so that our people may mature for the fulfillment of the mission allotted to it by the Creator of the universe." Hitler goes on to identify the enemy of his mission, the Jews, which reflects another conspiracy theory called the stab in the back, popular in Germany in the 1920s and 1930s. According to this theory, the only reason the Germans lost World War I was that they were stabbed in the back by the November criminals. The armistice was signed on November 11, 1918, who the Nazis insisted were Jews, Marxists, and Bolsheviks. And this stab-in-the-back conspiracy theory itself derives from an earlier and larger conspiracy theory involving the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, a hoaxed document purporting to be the proceedings of a secret meeting of Jews plotting global domination. A number of prominent people at the time believed the Protocols hoax, including the American industrialist Henry Ford, who published his own conspiratorial tract titled The International Jew, the World's Foremost Problem. He later recanted and withdrew the book from circulation when he found out the conspiracy theory was a fake. What all this shows is the power of conspiratorial belief to motivate people to act, including murderous action, from killing dozens in New Zealand to murdering millions in the Holocaust. Conspiracy theories are as countless as they are confusing. I once met a politician who told me that he believes the fluoridation of water is the greatest scam ever perpetrated on the public. I've been confronted by 9/11 truthers who have insisted that the Al-Qaeda attack was actually an inside job by the Bush administration. Others have regaled me for hours with their breathless tales of who really killed JFK, RFK, MLK Jr., Jimmy Hoffa, and Princess Diana, along with the nefarious goings-on of the Federal Reserve, the New World Order, the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Committee of 300, the Knights Templar, the Freemasons, the Illuminati, the Bilderberg Group, the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, and the Zionist Occupation Government, ZOG, that secretly runs the United States. It would take Madison Square Garden to hold all the conspiracists plotting world domination. But what is a conspiracy, and how does it differ from a conspiracy theory? Well, I define a conspiracy as two or more people plotting or acting in secret to gain an advantage or to harm others immorally or illegally. I distinguish a conspiracy from a conspiracy theory, which I define as a structured belief about a conspiracy, whether it is real or not. A conspiracy theorist, or conspiracist, is someone who holds a conspiracy theory about a possible conspiracy, again, whether or not it is real. These lectures will cover both conspiracies and conspiracy theories with an eye toward figuring out why people believe them and how we can determine which are likely to be true or false. Although the terms conspiracy theory, conspiracy theorist, and conspiracist do sometimes carry pejorative connotations meant to disparage someone or their beliefs, as in, that's just a crazy conspiracy theory, or he's one of those nutty conspiracists, the terms, in fact, have a rich history not meant to disparage. In his 2018 book, Escaping the Rabbit Hole, How to Debunk Conspiracy Theories Using Facts, Logic, and Respect, Mick West traces the history of the term conspiracy theory back to 1870. Long before the Warren Report following the assassination of JFK popularized the term, conspiracy theory was used, says West, as a descriptor for largely unfounded theories that seek to explain events by appealing to nefarious conspiracy. Such theories were especially popular among organizations like the Ku Klux Klan and the John Birch Society. Using the newspaper archive database, West tallied the number of times the term conspiracy theory appeared in newspapers, and he found clear spikes in association with the JFK assassination in 1963, Watergate in 1972 to 1974, the House Select Committee on Assassinations Report in 1978, the Iran-Contra scandal in 1988, and especially the films Conspiracy Theory and Men in Black in 1997, both of which portray conspiracy theories as true. To these, I would add the wildly popular television series X-Files, which featured a conspiracy believer and skeptic in tension over nearly every conspiracy theory imaginable, with the now iconic cigarette-smoking man lurking in the shadows. For the 2000s, West turned to Google Trends data to reveal three spikes in the use of the term conspiracy theory in 2009, 2010, and 2012, all associated with the popular television series Conspiracy Theory with Jesse Ventura, in which the actor and former governor of Minnesota portrays nearly every conspiracy theory he encounters as true, meeting clandestine operatives in underground parking garages who whisper to him what really happened. Who believes in such conspiracies? Surveys by the political scientists and conspiracy researchers Joseph Yusinek and Joseph Parent show that conspiracists cut across gender, age, race, income, political affiliation, educational level, and occupational status. For example, both liberals and conservatives believe in conspiracies at roughly the same level, although each thinks different secret cabals are at work, with liberals more likely to suspect that media sources and political parties are pawns of rich capitalists and corporations, while conservatives are more likely to believe that academics and liberal elites control these same institutions. There are other factors at work as well. Race, for example, is not a predictor of overall conspiracism, but it does partially determine which conspiracy theories are likely to be embraced. African Americans, for example, are more likely to believe that the federal government invented AIDS to kill blacks and that the CIA planted crack cocaine in inner-city neighborhoods to ruin them. By contrast, white Americans are more likely to suspect the feds are conspiring to abolish the Second Amendment and convert the nation into a socialist commune. Education appears to attenuate conspiracy thinking, with 42% of those without a high school diploma scoring high in conspiratorial predispositions, compared to those with postgraduate degrees, who come in at 22%. Nevertheless, that 1 in 5 Americans with postgraduate degrees believe in conspiracies tells us something else is going on here. In my book, The Believing Brain, I suggested that two cognitive processes are at work in conspiracy thinking. One, patternicity, or the tendency to find meaningful patterns in both meaningful and meaningless noise. And two, agenticity, or the tendency to infuse patterns with meaning, intention, and agency. I will explore these concepts in more depth in another lecture, but the idea is that the pattern detection filters of conspiracists are wide open, thereby letting in any and all patterns as real, with little or no screening of potential false patterns. Conspiracy theorists connect the dots of random events into meaningful patterns and then infuse those patterns with intentional agency and believe that these intentional agents control the world, sometimes invisibly from the top down, instead of the bottom-up causal randomness that determines much of what happens in our world. To these factors, we can add three cognitive biases that often distort events and evidence to fit our preconceived conspiratorial conceptions. For example, the confirmation bias is the tendency to seek and find confirming evidence in support of already existing beliefs and to ignore or reinterpret disconfirming evidence. Once you've decided that a conspiracy theory is true, your brain sets out to find evidence to support it and filter out evidence that doesn't. Another is the hindsight bias, in which we tailor after-the-fact explanations to what has already happened. Once an event has occurred, we look back and reconstruct how it happened, why it had to happen that way and not some other way, and why we should have seen it coming all along, the very essence of conspiracism. Then there's cognitive dissonance, the phenomenon of mental tension created when someone holds two conflicting thoughts simultaneously, such as what happens when conspiracy theories about the end of the world don't come true. Instead of admitting their mistake, believers double down on their belief and rationalize the failures, all in an attempt to reduce dissonance. We will explore these biases in more depth in later lectures because they come up again and again in conspiratorial thinking. Anxiety, alienation, and feelings of rejection are also factors in conspiratorial cognition. For example, in 2017, Princeton University researchers had subjects write a brief description of themselves that they then shared with two other people in their small group, telling them that they would be judged by the other group members. The subjects who were told that they were rejected were more inclined to believe in conspiracy-related scenarios. And it's not just private anxieties. Cultural anxiety may also lead to conspiracy thinking. A 2018 survey of over 3,000 Americans, for example, found that those who reported feeling that American values are eroding were more likely to agree with conspiratorial statements, such as, "Many major events have behind them the actions of a small group of influential people." Feeling in control or powerful in your environment reduces anxiety, but the opposite, concern about what may be out of your control, can increase anxiety and conspiratorial paranoia about things that could go wrong. In a 2015 study conducted in the Netherlands, for example, researchers divided subjects into three groups. One, those primed to feel powerless and out of control. Two, those primed to feel in control and powerful. And three, a control group not primed for anything. These subjects were then told about a construction project undergoing problems that could be related to a conspiracy by the city council to steal money from the project's budget. Subjects primed to feel powerless and out of control were more likely to believe the conspiracy theory. Researchers have also found that conspiratorial speculation runs higher after natural disasters like earthquakes or when people fear that they may lose their job. There's another reason why people believe in conspiracy theories that researchers have largely neglected. A lot of them are true. Enough conspiracy theories are real that it pays to be constructively paranoid because sometimes they really are out to get us. If we take the Oxford English Dictionary's definition of a conspiracy theory as a belief that some covert but influential agency, typically political in motivation and oppressive in intent, is responsible for an unexplained event, then even a cursory review of history reveals that conspiracies have dramatically influenced the course of history and may still be found at work in modern societies. Consider some examples. Julius Caesar was stabbed to death by a conspiracy of Roman senators on the Ides of March in 44 BC. The Gunpowder Plot of 1605 saw a group of provincial English Catholics attempt to assassinate King James I by blowing up the House of Lords during the state opening of Parliament. The plot was discovered and thwarted days before, with the conspiracists caught, tried, convicted, hanged, drawn, and quartered. In 1776, an elite group of soldiers were assigned to be George Washington's bodyguards, some of whom were plotting to assassinate the future first president of the United States at the behest of the governor of New York and the mayor of New York City. The plot was foiled, thanks only to the ineptitude of the plotters to keep a secret. Abraham Lincoln was assassinated by a conspiracy of Southerners angered by the outcome of the Civil War, which itself was instigated by a Southern cabal to illegally secede from the United States, arguably the biggest conspiracy in U.S. history. World War I exploded after a Serbian separatist society called the Black Hand conspired to assassinate the Austrian Archduke Franz Ferdinand, leading to an arms race that erupted in the Guns of August and the start of a conflict that resulted in the deaths of millions. The Japanese sneak attack on Pearl Harbor was, by definition, a conspiracy that the U.S. military and intelligence agencies failed to detect, leading to conspiracy theories that President Roosevelt let it happen on purpose to drag America into war. The obsessively paranoid Joseph Stalin wasn't conspiratorially minded enough to realize that Hitler was plotting to break their non-aggression pact and invade the Soviet Union, despite warnings from the British government to that effect. The consequence was the deaths of tens of millions of soldiers and civilians. In the 1950s, with his now infamous congressional hearings, the conspiratorially minded Senator Joseph McCarthy launched a witch hunt to ferret out what he was certain was a communist conspiracy to destroy America. In the 1960s, Operation Northwoods was a document produced under the Kennedy administration that proposed a number of false flag operations that might be carried out in order to justify military intervention in Cuba. Among the proposals were such ideas as staging a fake attack on the U.S. military base at Guantanamo Bay, employing a fake Russian MiG aircraft to buzz a real U.S. civilian airliner, faking an attack on a U.S. ship to make it look like Cubans did it, and developing a communist Cuban terror campaign in Miami. None of these crazy ideas were implemented, but that members of Kennedy's administration considered them, even in the context of a meeting with people just spitballing ideas willy-nilly, reveals the lengths to which even high-ranking people in the government are willing to conspire against others to get their ways. In the 1970s, Watergate stands out as a conspiracy of dunces, and the Pentagon Papers revealed the extent to which the Kennedy, Johnson, and Nixon administrations conspired to escalate the Vietnam War without congressional knowledge, much less approval. And we now know that Kennedy conspired to have Fidel Castro assassinated, Johnson conspired to cover up that fact when he took office, and Nixon secretly recorded conversations in the Oval Office that revealed his distinctive view of presidential power, a view he later summarized in an interview with David Frost as follows. "Well, when the president does it, that means that it is not illegal." In the 1980s, the Iran-Contra Arms for Hostages scandal was a conspiracy that embodied what conspiracists since World War I have been concerned about, the usurpation of power by conspirators who were legally elected to their positions instead of hijacking government agencies through a coup, which was common in centuries past. In the 1990s, government overreach against Randy Weaver and his family in Ruby Ridge, Idaho, and against David Koresh and the Branch Davidians in Waco, Texas, understandably led to the rise of the conspiratorially minded militia movement that culminated in Timothy McVeigh's bombing of a federal building in Oklahoma City. In the 2000s, the Bush administration concocted a conspiracy theory that Iraq was developing weapons of mass destruction as a justification for invading that country, which proved false when inspectors failed to find any WMDs. And WikiLeaks revealed the extent to which the NSA and other governmental agencies conspired to spy on Americans and foreign leaders on the heels of 9/11. As Buffalo Springfield cautioned in their 1966 hit song, For What It's Worth, "There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear." The problem, as we shall see in this course, is discerning true from false conspiracies. As Buffalo Springfield also warned, "Paranoia strikes deep. Into your life it will creep." Sometimes the constructive paranoia of reasonable skepticism about governments and corporations goes too far. In the mind of the paranoid conspiracist, nothing happens by accident. Everything is connected, and there are no coincidences. But, in fact, more often than not, accidents, chance, and coincidences direct the course of human events, especially in the messy worlds of politics, economics, and culture. But to the conspiratorial mind, contingencies and coincidences can be strung together into a meaningful pattern behind which active clandestine agents are said to be pulling the strings to direct local, national, and even world events. This can range from dark entities fixing stock prices and influencing elections to extraterrestrial lizard people running governments and financial institutions. In this course, we will look into the clandestine world of cabals, connivances, and contrivances of all stripes, investigating history's greatest and most widespread conspiracy theories, carefully deconstructing them on the basis of the available evidence to determine which ones are true, false, or indeterminable. And I will develop a comprehensive theory for why people believe in conspiracies even when there is no evidence for them, or in the teeth of contradictory evidence. We will also consider new conspiracies and conspiracy theories involving the use of social media to manipulate the public without our knowledge, including the Russian conspiracy to influence the 2016 presidential election. And a new type of conspiracy theory without the theory, in which the mere assertion of a claim without any evidence is all that is needed. As when President Trump repeats the line, "A lot of people are saying," followed by no examples whatsoever of who is doing the saying. Even more nefarious, we will look into the new Chinese program of social credits based on citizens' behavior, favorable or unfavorable toward the government, with better or worse social consequences, such as the availability of schools, travel, and jobs. The actions of a billion Chinese citizens will be monitored by hundreds of millions of cameras and by bird-like drones equipped with GPS and a data link antenna for real-time surveillance of everything from traffic violators to litterers. That's a conspiracy the East German Stasi secret police could only have dreamed of during the Cold War. As if the run-up to the 2016 presidential election wasn't crazy enough, in the middle of it, and continuing after Trump's victory, there emerged a bizarre conspiracy theory at Trump rallies, with his supporters holding signs reading Q and QAnon. It apparently began with an internet user called Q Clearance Patriot, or Q, who posted on internet message boards like 4chan and 8chan the conspiracy theory that inside the deep state, there is an anonymous source working against the Trump administration. "I can hint and point, but cannot give too many highly classified data points," the Q conspiracist wrote, adding, "These are crumbs, and you cannot imagine the full and complete picture." That complete picture apparently includes such operatives as Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, George Soros, and various Hollywood celebrities, all alleged to be involved in a global sex trade and pedophile ring. The coincidences, spelled with a Q, include the recurrence of certain numbers, such as 17, Q is the 17th letter, and 4, 10, and 20 correspond to DJT, or Donald J. Trump. And since there are no coincidences in the mind of the conspiracist, such numerology led to the absurd 2016 conspiracy theory, also spelled with a Q, of Pizzagate. Promulgators of this theory asserted, without any evidence and beyond belief, that Hillary Clinton was directing a pedophile ring out of a pizza parlor. As absurd as this sounds, the Pizzagate conspiracy theory led to a young man to shoot up a restaurant with an AR-15-style rifle, claiming he intended to break up the perceived perversion. It was fortunate no one was hurt in the incident, but it revealed the power of conspiratorial paranoia. People often act on their beliefs, and when those beliefs contain conspiracy theories about nefarious goings-on, those acts can turn deadly, as happened at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh on October 27, 2018, when an assailant armed with guns and one of the oldest conspiracy theories about the Jews running the world murdered 11 congregants before his capture. "I just want to kill Jews," he announced. Consuming content on the online social network Gab, the conspiracists grew paranoid about the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, HIAS, which the Tree of Life Synagogue helped support. On Gab, the conspiracists read that HIAS provided aid to the migrant caravans moving north from Central America toward the United States southern border. Quote, HIAS likes to bring invaders in that kill our people, the assassin posted on Gab just before he committed the mass murder, adding, I can't sit by and watch my people get slaughtered. Screw your optics, I'm going in. And this brings us back to the mass murder in New Zealand with which we began this lecture. These are just two of countless conspiracy theories with real-world consequences, mostly bad. Ideas matter. Beliefs matter. Conspiracy theories matter. And they are not confined to the fringes of pop culture or the dark web, but instead penetrate all areas of public and private life, often directing the lives of people and the course of history. So, as we analyze examples like these in the lectures ahead, I hope you'll reach the same conclusion that I've reached. The subject of this course, conspiracies and conspiracy theories, could well be one of the most important subjects any of us can study.